Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the actress Joan Allen, who film and TV audiences will recognize from her work in movies like The Ice Storm, The Contender, Room, and The Bourne Trilogy, or the series The Family from a couple of TV seasons ago. But as most theater fans will know, she got her start on stage, first at the Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago, and then on Broadway, where she won a Tony starring opposite John Malkovich in Burn This, and soon went on to star in the original Broadway production of The Heidi Chronicles. She took some time off from theater for a while, but following a return to the Steppenwolf in 2013, she's back on Broadway as part of the starry cast of Kenneth Lonergan's The Waverly Gallery, which got great reviews across the board, even from Variety's critic Marilyn Stasio, who at the same time dubbed it a contender for Broadway's most depressing play of the season. Hey, Joan. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here. Yeah.
So for listeners who aren't familiar with the Waverly Gallery, it's a Kenneth Lonergan play. It first played off-Broadway in 2000, and it's a memory play about an older woman named Gladys, who's played in this production by Elaine May, who's gradually deteriorating due to Alzheimer's. And you play Gladys's daughter, Ellen, and I have to imagine that for an actor, it's a pretty sad place to go every night, you know, sometimes twice a day, is it?
Well, it's kind of surprising. You know, when I first read the play, which I thought was beautiful initially.
Had you seen it the first
time
around?
No, I hadn't. Yeah. I hadn't seen it. And my mother went through... not like Gladys. Hers was very different. My mother lived to be almost 97. And just the last couple years of her life, she went into, it was like a psychotic break. And she was fine. She was hard of hearing, like Gladys, for many years. But she had a very unusual thing. She was fine one day, and then the next day, she was in a nursing facility at that time in the Midwest. The next day, she was tearing things off the walls and screaming and calling for the police and doing all kinds of, you know, very paranoid things. And I'm the youngest of four, and we were all very involved in helping and supporting her. So even though she was at a nursing home, our presence was really huge. So I had that real experience. Now, it's very unlike Gladys's is much more gradual. Yep. It's murkier. It's like, is she okay still? Is she safe enough? Is she not? But I have to say...
Yeah, she still lives alone in the play,
she
right?
Does.
She goes to work or her version of it, right?
Yeah. And it was much harder to detect and to know when is the moment when it's not safe enough for her to be by herself anymore. My mother's was very clear. And so I had lived through something like this. And I thought, oh, gosh... Do I want to go there every night?
Yeah.
I know what it's really like. Right. But, you know, ultimately, and the way Lila Neugebauer has directed it and
the
way Kenny has talked about it is, you know, when you are in a situation like that, you really are troubleshooting a lot. You're not, even with my own mother, we weren't sitting there crying all the time, you know, wringing our hands. I mean, it's you really are trying to figure out It's very active, actually. What can I do? Maybe I could get her a cat. Maybe she could have this. I can't fix that, but I can make dinner. You're really looking for proactive things to do, and sometimes it actually is very funny. You have to laugh at the situation.
Yeah, yeah. And so, there's humor in this play.
And there's a lot of humor in this play. So I almost think in some ways it's maybe a little more difficult to watch than to be in.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I certainly have moments in the show where it really gets to me, but
yeah,
it's kind of surprising that way. It's you're really like, what can I do next? What can I do next? What can I try to do next?
Right.
And so it's actually quite active.
Right, in a way. Which is good for acting on stage.
Yeah.
And acting in general, yeah. So it's not something, it sounds like it's not something you need to sort of do a whole lot of work to prepare yourself for outside of... You know, the stuff you do.
I'm very protective. Right? I like to get to the theater early.
Yeah.
I'm like the first one there. I'm there like 2 hours before the show.
Wow. Yeah.
And I have a routine, kind of zen, ritualized. You know, I'm very quiet. Yeah. That I just have. There's nothing, you know, very special or unusual about it. But I like to kind of get quiet before the show. But then once the show is over, I kind of, you know.
Let it go.
Right,
right, yeah. And what, so did you know, was anyone else cast by the time the play got to you? Did you know who was?
Everybody was cast except David Cromer.
Okay. Yeah.
That role had not been cast. So I knew about Elaine, and I knew about Lucas, and I knew about Michael.
And what are, Elaine May and Michael Cera and Lucas Hedges. What's it like to work with Elaine May, who hasn't been on Broadway since, apparently, this is news to me, or was news to me when it was first announced, that she hasn't been on Broadway since An Evening with Nichols and May.
Yes.
Back in the 60s.
I know. Yeah. I know it. She's just... she's just remarkable.
Yeah.
I kind of don't even have words to describe her. She is so smart, so energized, so doesn't suffer fools, and so real that I feel she gives me so much working opposite her. When you look in her eyes, I'm like, you've just given me 12 things to think about because there's so much going on. She calls herself the logic Nazi. She cannot do something that is not organic and real. She's just like incapable of it. Her body just won't go there, and that's why her performance is just people, I think she's improving a lot of it, and
honestly, it does just feel that way. It feels very alive. Yeah.
She's just incredibly alive and real.
Yeah, yeah. And then Lucas is someone who is fast rising in Hollywood. He's got like, I think, 3 movies coming out this fall.
I think so.
And he's in Boy Erased and Ben Is Back, and oh, there's one other. It's
Many. The Jonah Hill film about
mid-90s. That's right.
He's
that's
in
right.
that as
and,
well.
And how have you found him to work? Do you understand why? Why Hollywood is so excited about him?
Yeah, I do. I do. And there's a little twist.
And he plays Lucas. We should say Lucas plays your son.
He plays my son. And many years ago, when I was acting at Steppenwolf in Chicago, and then when I first came to New York, I was very friendly with Lucas's father, Peter Hedges.
Oh.
He loved Steppenwolf, and he kind of like followed my work, and we hung out together. And I haven't seen him in many years. So when I saw that Lucas was being cast, and then I looked at his face, and he does resemble his father, I was like, this is taking me so back to my 20s. Oh, my gosh. There seemed to be kind of a meant-to-be quality to it. And it's just delightful.
Right.
Delightful.
And then playing your husband is, he plays your son and also sort of the narrator of the piece.
Yes.
And playing your husband is David Cromer, who I think most people on Broadway, or people who go to a lot of Broadway, will more recognize as a director. Most recently, the director of The Band's Visit. He just won a Tony, right?
Exactly.
Can you see how someone who directs, can you see how he is an actor who also directs in the way he approaches a role?
I would say he really kind of left that to the wayside, you know, because he's also done a fair amount of acting.
Right, of course, yeah.
Not as much recently, but... Yeah.
I know, we've forgotten, but yeah, he did a lot in Chicago, right?
Yeah. And he was in his production of Our Town
Here,
which
yeah,
I saw, and he was, you know, the stage manager. I mean, he's just incredible. He's also incredibly real and authentic. And so he really... he would talk occasionally directorially about, you know, Lila's ideas or something, but very, very seldom. He really just... We were all just in it as actors together.
Right, yeah. And this is... This is you took some time off from theater. This was a while back. You took some time off, right?
I have taken breaks from theater.
Yeah, and why is that? It seemed like there was one in particular that seemed pretty long. It was
a very long break.
Yeah.
A big reason for that is my daughter.
Mm, yeah. Well,
I have one child, and she's now 24. And that
theater is hard when you have a kid, right?
Well, and you're gonna miss 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. every night.
Yeah.
That critical time to be with your child. And that was a huge determining factor for me. It's like, I don't want to do that because I'm only having one in particular, you know, one child. And I don't want to miss, I can't be away every night and do that.
Did you miss theater when you weren't doing it, did you find?
I was kind of happy to take a break. Yeah. For a while and do concentrate on
film and television
work. It actually felt kind of good for me personally.
Yeah.
So I feel kind of refreshed, you know, being back on Broadway now.
How did you, what was the biggest sort of transition for you in terms of how you work going from stage to screen stuff?
Oh, I found film screen very confusing. I was like, I don't understand how people do this. This makes no sense to me whatsoever. Because I came very late to film. I think I did my first film was like 28 or 29 years old, which in this day and age is pretty, you know, long in the tooth. And I'd only done theater all through high school, all through my early mid-20s.
Right.
And I found film completely opaque. I'm like, I don't understand how you have an emotion and do it out of sequence, and there's all this chaos, and there are marks that you have to hit, and how do you not look down and hit your mark? And the language, the vocabulary surrounding the terminology,
sure.
I didn't understand.
Right.
I would do things, and they'd say, you're overlapping. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. What is that? It was just an incredibly different way of working.
Yeah.
And I would say it took me a good 4 or 5 years before I really felt like, oh, the penny's dropping. I think I understand this better now.
Do you have favorite roles of your, particularly among your screen work that you really love?
I've had really great experiences. One film that, and I don't rewatch them after I've seen them initially. I don't watch them again, really. I mean, I've watched Pleasantville because I kind of had to, but they get a little foggy in my mind. But
Well, your memories are the experience of shooting it, right? Not watching it.
Yeah.
In the story.
But I think one film that just always comes to my mind. From my perspective of being perfect, close to perfect, is The Ice Storm.
Yeah.
I just think that film is, my memory of it, it's many years now, was that this is a very realized film in all aspects.
Right.
And I found that very, you know, gratifying.
Yeah. It was, as I was prepping for this and sort of looking back over a lot of the film work you've done, it seems like you can sort of, in a way, trace the evolution of how Hollywood started to expand its thinking on what roles women could play. Because for a long time, it seems like you're playing a lot of wife roles, and then suddenly it's around 2000 when you're playing a vice presidential candidate, and then you get to be like a badass, possibly scheming CIA director, right? Like,
right.
I feel like there's an evolution there that was that. Was there an evolution also in sort of the things that you were offered, or was it more...
I think because I had done, I think within a period of like 2-3 years, I did The Crucible, The Ice Storm, and Nixon.
Right.
And for lack of a better way of putting it, kind of wife roles.
Yeah.
But of wife roles...
Those are good ones.
Those are, like, really good ones.
Yes.
And then I did Pleasantville after that as well, which was kind of a departure because of the style and, you know, was more of a comedy in some ways.
Right.
And so, you know, there did come a time after that when I would get offered certain quote-unquote wife roles that were not as good as that, and I would say, I've done that. I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. You've also been in a fair number of action movies.
I know.
I was actually surprised by how many. I
know.
Well, yeah, she was in that too. You were the, you know, Death Race.
Face Off.
Yeah. Do you enjoy that genre?
I love it. It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's so fun to do something that's just, you know, different.
Right.
And terrific directors. And it was really, I had a great time on them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of roles have you been getting lately? Like, what, or rather offered to you lately? Like, have you seen a shift in, and maybe this is in the post-rise of kind of Me Too and Time's Up, have you seen any shift in kind
of
I'm
not really reading anything much right now.
No.
I mean, it's also, I'm in this play through the end of January.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, and then the holidays are coming up and not much going on.
It's
so,
yeah.
So, I'm not really reading very much, you know, these days.
Why was now a good time to come back to theater?
My daughter's now grown,
yeah.
So I don't have to worry. She's 24. I don't have to worry about 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. It depends on the project, you know. I'm also very picky about what plays I want to be involved with.
Yeah. Was the last one the one in 2013 at Steppenwolf?
It
the
was.
Wheel? Yeah.
The Wheel. That was the last one that I did.
Right.
You know, it's a big commitment to do 8 shows a week, and you better love it.
Right.
And I think I knew with the Waverly Gallery, there were so many pieces of it between the writing, and I met with Lila Neugebauer and Kenny Lonergan. And
had you worked with Kenny before?
I had not.
Yeah.
But I just got a great feeling from them, this connection with Lucas and his dad. And then I also had this really strange connection with Elaine May that back in my early 20s when I was with Steppenwolf, we would do Nichols and May routines to try to raise money for the theater. So we would put the record, you know, the record of the routines on a record player and memorize them and transcribe them and then try to copy them completely verbatim, tonally, pause, everything. And we would pull those out for teas and things like that to try to raise, you know, $500 for the theater. They were very great pieces for that kind of thing.
Sure.
And so I just had that connection to her as well. So all those different things and the play and having gone through a version of dementia with my own mother, you know, it was just like, this should happen.
Did your experience inhabiting Elaine May previously help you create a relationship as her daughter or imagine yourself as her daughter?
I don't know about that. I don't know. I guess I didn't really think of it in those terms. I just think of her as just being just an impeccable performer and so smart and so unique. And
is she funny? Is she as funny as she is sort of as we who, you know, don't know her know her?
She has a great sense of humor.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it shows up in the play as well.
Oh, but, she's just got a, you know, fantastic sense of humor.
Yeah,
and
while you were at Steppenwolf in the early days, then that is where you first did Burn This. Do I have that right? And then you ended up in New York with it, or
the first play that I came to New York with was a Steppenwolf show called And a Nightingale Sang.
Oh yes, right.
That was the very first one that had been done in Chicago and got brought to New York.
Right.
Burn This was like a year or two later. At least. Mm. Circle Rep, that theater downtown, Lanford Wilson had written the play, and there was an actress within the company. John Malkovich had been cast. Lanford really kind of wrote it for John Malkovich.
Right.
And there was an actress, and I'm forgetting her name, Nancy Snyder or something, I might have that wrong, who was cast to play my role. Well, she got pregnant.
Oh,
and he was going to have a baby.
Right.
So she was no longer going to be able to play a modern dancer.
Yeah.
And they reached out to me to do a reading of it with John. I'd worked with John a lot at Steppenwolf, and so that's how
and
I got
connected
to him.
You knew him in college.
We went to college together at Eastern Illinois University. Yes.
Yeah. So you guys knew each other for a while.
Yeah.
Which must have been helpful as you're acting together, I would think.
Yeah. Well, he's actually responsible for helping me get into the Steppenwolf company. He suggested me to them, and they brought me in, and so.
Right. Yeah. Burn This is coming to Broadway again.
That's what I just heard recently with Carrie Russell.
Carrie Russell, yeah, and Adam Driver.
Yes.
Seems like it's going to be a good show, right?
Great, yeah. I've worked with Carrie on The Upside of Anger. She played one of my daughters.
Yeah.
I love her, and I'm excited about it. That's great.
Yeah, have you seen that play lately? I have not. So
I haven't.
To see it again. Yeah.
No, I haven't.
And the last time you were on Broadway was Impressionism, is that right?
It was, yes.
Right, and what was that experience like? That was a show that had sort of a disappointing run. But,
I love Jack O'Brien, the director. I liked the play.
Jeremy Irons was in it.
What's bad about that? So.
Right. Do you remember what it was about that play that made you think, oh yeah, this is the play?
You just know it. You know, there's something, I think there's a timing thing about where you are in your own life, and you know, if you want to keep turning the page, that's always my, that's my measuring stick. It's like, do I want to turn the page and see what's happening next?
Yeah.
So.
Are you a reviews actor? Do you read
them? I don't. I read nothing.
Did you ever? Or it's just...
I did in my 20s. And actually, one thing that made me stop was something good that was said about me.
Mm-hmm. It was
a moment that I was doing The Three Sisters at Steppenwolf that Austin Pendleton had directed.
Oh, yeah.
And there was this one moment where I played Masha and I run across the stage and I throw myself on Vershin and they mentioned that moment very positively, and it just made me self-conscious ever since.
Right.
And I thought, I don't think so. I read absolutely nothing.
Right.
I just hear through the grapevine generally, you know, it's been positively received, not so, but I don't read anything.
Right, yeah, and how does that, I'm always curious how those reviews, whatever they are, kind of filter back into people's awareness as they're working on a show. Can you sense a change in the morale of the cast, or is there?
I think people in my cast don't read anything. I think I'm pretty sure Elaine doesn't.
Yeah,
I'm almost positive that Lucas does not. I think David Cromer might, and I'm not quite sure about Michael.
Right.
But so I have felt nothing. Our show after opening night was probably better than our opening night show.
Oh, okay.
And there's that let.
There is just
a letdown, you know, from the build up and the excitement and things like that. But I think the show was even better.
Right.
The second night, which is pretty unusual.
Yeah. Do you have a sense of? It had been a while since you've been on Broadway, then there was Impressionism, and now this play.
Uh-huh.
What's your take on the ways in which Broadway has changed over the years?
Well, I'm happy that it's just as lively and robust as it is right now. I think...
It's a good time to be on Broadway, right?
Yeah. I think maybe one of the things that has changed the most is just the whole social media and how you promote it and all the things that you have to do. And, you know, that is a new... And I'm not a social media person. I don't go on Facebook. I don't do Instagram. I don't tweet. I am a non-social media person. So that has kind of surprised me. My publicist has sort of prepared me. He's like, you need to know this is not like like it was, you know, in the late 80s.
But they're not forcing you to tweet or anything.
They're not.
Yeah, well, that, yet. Yeah.
They're not.
Right. So what's next on your plate? Do you know? You mentioned doing this to January.
I don't have anything lined up after this, so we'll see.
Would you be interested in doing series television again?
It would depend. It really would depend. I mean, I had a very good time working on The Family.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I was able to live at home. We shot, you know, in the, you know, the New York City area.
Right.
It's great at my age. I love to be able to come home, you know, and at night. And I had a very good experience on that, so I would definitely consider it. It would depend on the project and the role.
Is there more theater in your future?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Depends what what comes across my plate.
Do you like new work, or do you respond to new work more than
I?
classics? Or
I kind of like new work more,
yeah.
a little bit, you know. Even though the Waverly Gallery was written, you know, like in the late 90s or something,
right.
around 2000, that production was around 2000,
yeah,
I was
exactly.
not familiar with the play.
Right.
And so it was like, it was new to me.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know that it's been, how much it's been done.
I don't think it has. I'd never seen it. I also missed it the first time around, so I've never seen it.
I think
then,
you really have to have, you know, particularly for casting Gladys, you really,
yeah.
it's you really have
you
to have
Elaine
the
May.
Right fit.
Right.
I mean, that's a tall order, and it's an incredibly difficult play to memorize because of the circular nature
yep.
of going back. I started memorizing my lines 2 months before rehearsal
yeah.
even started. So.
And there are moments in the play where you're... where I started to get concerned for Elaine May not knowing her lines. But, you know... It actually became clear as it went on that actually, she's just doing it really
she's
well.
She's just so good.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's just coming out of her mouth for the first time.
Right.
She's that good.
Right, good. Well, enjoy the rest of the run.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in and chatting with me. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Gordon.
Yep.
My pleasure.
That was Joan Allen, now on Broadway in the Waverly Gallery. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I've got the brother-sister duo Tyne and Tim Daly on, talking about their co-starring roles in the Teresa Rebeck play, Downstairs. Until then, thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.